Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up in just a moment, two of the outreach workers for the Ceasefire Anti-Violence Initiative. They were featured in the documentary, The Interrupters. And if you have not had a chance, we'll give you a chance actually this hour, to get this documentary. It will just knock you out. This is a community. And the outreach workers have criminal pasts as well. Both of their fathers were in prison. One was a very well-known gang leader on the south side of Chicago. The other saw his father murdered when he was 11 years old. And both of these outreach workers were involved in criminal activities themselves. They changed, and now they literally walk into what could be a violent situation and interrupt the violence. The person who started the program believes that violence is a disease, and he had done a lot of work in prevention of AIDS in Africa and brought this philosophy back to the south side of Chicago. What some of these young people have to live through, it just breaks your heart. What both Kobe and Amina had to live through will break your heart, but it's a really important documentary, and these two outreach workers will join us momentarily. You won't want to miss this conversation. We've got a lot of things going on today. We also are in a pledge drive. Lisa Nalbandian is joining me in our studios in Milwaukee, and this is our spring membership drive. You count, of course, on WPR's Ideas Network for talk about issues that matter to you. Please make a gift of any amount right now and help us pay for the programs you depend on. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Kathleen. Last hour, the goal was 45 pledges, and we heard from 24 listeners. Thank you so much for those pledges. Our goal this hour is to get 40 pledges. Help us meet this important goal by making a contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we try to be as timely as possible when choosing topics and guests for this show, as you know. For example, last week we had Russ Feingold on the program. We had a guest from the World Health Organization, a guest talking about post-traumatic stress who had worked in Iraq. We've just had so many great guests. You know that if you listen to this show, we just have top-notch guests. And maybe it's why the program has attracted so many loyal listeners, because you want to hear in-depth discussions that go beyond the daily headlines. And certainly the hour that's coming up goes beyond the daily headlines in a big way. It's all made possible by listener contributions. To make your contribution, go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have something very special going on this drive. Pledge any amount and you'll be entered in a drawing. It's a trip for two on a garden tour of London and the surrounding area with WPR host Larry Mueller. Find out the details and make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In just a moment, we'll be talking to two outreach workers who were featured in the great movie, important movie, The Interrupters. Discussions like these are possible because of your financial support, and I can assure you, you're not going to find discussions like these in many other places. Please give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You give to WPR to support the programs, and as an added incentive, we have something special for you.
Yes, we do want to tell you that you can receive the DVD, The Interrupters, when you donate $150 or more. It's a documentary that is very important. I can see many people who want a deeper understanding of violence in our communities, particularly in our central cities, and teachers, and just as a way to change the hearts of young people. Ask for it when you make a pledge of $150. Your gift of any amount is appreciated at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Giving at WPR is easy. All it takes is a gift or of a dollar or two a week and a few minutes of your time.
A dollar or two a week adds up to about $50 or $100 for the year. And all year long, you'll enjoy this program. and all of the WPR programs you count on. Make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and give as generously as you can.
We're still looking for 39 pledges in the next 50 minutes or so. Help out now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And ask for the DVD, The Interrupters, with your pledge of $150 or more. Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
With your pledge of any amount, you'll be entered in a drawing for a trip for two on a garden tour to London, England. Get the details and pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you very much, Lisa. This hour of the program, I don't know how many of you have had a chance to see The Interrupters. It was on Frontline in February. It is one very important and extremely moving documentary. It takes us to Englewood, the South Side Chicago neighborhood that tops the city statistics for murder, drug addiction, teen pregnancy, and many other indications of social dysfunction. You will meet young people, very, very young people, who have died as a result of violence. You will understand what the street code is. What is, how do we get from I have a grievance to that grievance justifies violence? The people who are working in this program try to get to point two to figure out how we change response to grievance. There are many Chicago interrupters who are featured in this film, but three of them do very, very important work, and we are delighted to have a chance to meet two of them this hour. Amina Matthews and Kobe Williams are both violence interrupters at the Ceasefire Anti-Violence Initiative. We will hear about their past. They both were living less than savory lives and changed their lives. And they come from families where there, this is an understatement, was not a lot of support. And at least in Amina's case, her father was a leader of a notorious gang on Chicago's South Side. The documentary is raw. The problems that these people are facing, you know, being afraid to go out into your neighborhood because you're afraid of gunshots, and the number of people who have died is very, very heartbreaking. And these people are making a difference. Before we meet both Amina and Kobe, we'll just give you an idea of the kind of work that they are doing. This is Amina interrupting violence in this neighborhood by just walking in to the violence herself.
Obituary. Schools, churches, your mama's house, your cars. Those are safe zones. When I was about your age, I was making some real stupid decisions and some stupid calls that was causing me, my life, blood on my hands and my head. Stop.
Amina is one of our guests this hour. Amina Matthews, thank you very much for joining us, Amina.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. I love the description of you. People who see this film say, this woman ought to be running the UN.
Give me the key.
Give me the key. All right. Maybe that'll happen. Kobe Williams is joining us as well. Kobe is featured in this. Kobe, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well,
Kobe.
What's up, Amina?
Hey. I saw the movie over the weekend. I got to tell both of you, it just knocked me out. I haven't recovered from it yet. What you deal with every day, what the kind of violence, the reason for it, it just gets to the very core of your being, doesn't it? That it just shakes you up. It completely shakes you up.
Well, you know, one thing, I want to say thank you for your time that you watched it. You know, it's that documentary is not something that we thank people for. What we thank people for is the action that comes behind the documentary. So, you know, thank you for your time and everybody else that has supported the documentary at this point. But it has to be strong action behind it, and it is something that, and it still does, for me and for Kobe, impacts us to, in a way that we still have to do more.
Yeah. Tell me about Englewood, the south side of Chicago. You say, you have said, Amina, that you just love Englewood because you learned all of your life's lessons in that community. What is the community?
I did. I love Englewood. And anybody, you know, it's remarkable. We've had some students that come from, you know, Harvard and just come and hang out, and Howard University as well. And, you know, and they're Caucasians, and they come and they see Englewood and they see Auburn Gresham, and it's like, man, we thought that we would be hearing gunshots every day. We would see kids that's homeless every day, every second of the day, babies without clothes and shoes. We're not dealing with poverty at that level, or we're not dealing with violence at that level, but the level is still there. It's, you know, Englewood has taught me. I've been out on my own ever since I was 14, 15, and Englewood has always been good to me. It could have been a whole different way. You know, the guys that taught me my lesson, that was a part of my journey, they taught me how to maintain and provide for my young son at that time and provide for myself. So I thought that was honorable in that type of world. It was, you know, honorable for them to do that, because it could have been a whole different story. They could have had me on drugs, control, and all that other different nonsense, but they didn't. And, you know, the people in Englewood, there's families, there's grandmothers, there's great-grandmothers that still, you know, Kobe's grandmother still lives right outside of Englewood, and she's been there ever since we were little. You know, I'm older than Kobe, but I knew Kobe when he was a little boy out there wreaking havoc. But, you know, so it's really a community of, there's people moving in from other areas, and that's what's causing a lot of the you know, the problems. I don't want to say problems, but the misunderstandings of violence. Because people should deserve to live where they choose to. But, you know, it's a lot of territory issues. But Englewood is all good. It did me good. It treated me.
Yeah. Kobe, tell me about, this is really at the core of the film, too, trying to change this kind of philosophy. A lot of what happens because words can get you killed, and I think it's hard for us to wrap our minds around that. I have a grievance. That grievance justifies violence. How did that develop, and how do you counter that?
I mean, mostly because me and most of the people we're around, this is how we was learned at an early age, and we have learned how to deal with things in that type of way, in a violent way. It came up in our household. So, like, I mean, if somebody hit you, you hit them back. If they big into you, you got big brothers, big cousins to come right back. So you learned this at an early age. And it's just carried out. It's like normal. Like, if somebody go get some people, I go get some people. Somebody hurt me, I hurt them. So you learn these things at an early age, and that's how it just go on. So our job here, Ceasefire, what me and Amina and the rest of the team try to do is just help people change their mindset, their thinking, to educate them about, because you have a disagreement, that don't mean you got to shoot them, that don't mean you got to hurt them. It's all right to have disagreement, but let's sit down and work it out, though. So that's what me and Amina and them do on an everyday basis. That's, you know, try to give them another opportunity to just leave that alone. You be the bigger person. You walk off. You leave it alone, because at the end of the day, you lose. If you go out and hurt somebody, you're going to spend the rest of your life in the penitentiary. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to get somebody else killed who's innocent, who ain't got nothing to do with something. So we just try to educate them about, because you have a disagreement, you can resolve things without violence.
Do you think, I think that at some point in the film, you, Amina, or somebody in the film talks about most people having a soft spot. Do you think that's true, that most people have a soft spot, and how do you get to that?
Oh, everybody has a soft spot, sis. Everybody. You know, violence is a learned behavior. We were brought into this world with wanting to be nurtured. You know, we wanting, when babies cry out, they cry out to their mom or to the next person that can change that diaper and get that bottle, and, you know, tell them to shh. Something as that small as shh, it soothes the baby to calm down. And we were brought to that throughout our history of learning, far as a kid, a child, adolescent age, preteen, and an adult. So there's a soft spot in everyone's life, which may it be their grandmother, their mother, their child, somebody that had raised them and made a great impact in their lives, somebody that had just did not judge them and accepted them for every defect that they may have had, and understand that they love them in spite of, unconditionally. And once you find out that person has that, you got them. Mm. You got them. It's nothing to, you know, mistreat or abuse. And, you know, my soft spot is my children, my husband, Madea. And you know, and Kobe to say something to me about Miss Mildred. Miss Mildred is my soft spot, too. If Kobe and I have a disagreement, which we very seldom have a disagreement, but if we do have a disagreement, I always think about Miss Mildred and how she will she say to Mina, you a bad girl, and everything that Kobe and I may have not agreed upon or looked about, it's over with, because she loved me unconditional.
Hmm. What's your soft spot, Kobe?
Like Amina say, I mean, everybody definitely had a soft spot, because, I mean, my soft spot, like, my grandmama, that's my soft spot, because it's like right now, I watched
that's
the movie.
Mildred.
Yeah, that's Mildred. I watched the movie myself at least over 100 times, honestly. And
Kobe, I think you underestimate it. I think maybe 250.
Yeah, so every time I see my grandmama talking, you know, it's like we try to, my husband and I ain't saying he changed cousin, but we tried to talk to him. I instantly, when I see that part of the movie, I instantly started getting worried. I started like crying, because I know how so much she stayed on me through everything, just stayed on me. And I like, it, sometimes I just feel when I see her talking, I let her down so much though. So when my grandmama gets to talking, that's definitely my soft spot right there.
If you don't mind, we need to hear from both of you about how dramatically your lives changed. Amina, your father was a gang leader on the south side of Chicago, pretty notorious, and you, as you say, were into drugs, selling drugs, guns, party, etc. That's a pretty difficult path to switch around to the extent that you have done so. Tell me how that happened.
You know, and my dad is my soft spot, too. You know, so I have to, you know, when people talk about him, I get teary-eyed. And when I talk about him, I get teary-eyed. I just had an opportunity to go see him. I think it may have been 3 weeks ago. It seems so long ago, but it was 3 weeks ago. And, you know, being raised by a single grandmother, and my mom was so young when she had me, and just watching my dear struggle the way that she struggled, I didn't want to have 5, 6, 7, 10 jobs to maintain half the rent that month. You know, I just didn't want to do it. And I saw the guys and the girls on the streets, and I saw them, you know, the loud music in the cars, and the big white walls back in the day. And, you know, and I was attracted to that. I said, maybe I can, you know, that'd be a good job for me. You know, I didn't mm-hmm. know exactly what it was, but I thought it was a good job for me. And, you know, lo and behold, I learned the game. I learned what it was about. It had nothing to do with my dad. It had nothing to do with my mother. It had something all to do about me and the choices that I made. Madea was a very good provider. We never had conversations about drug dealers, gangbangers, or whatever in our household with Madea, because that was not her reality. It was kept from my grandmother for a while that Jeff Ford was my father, you know, by my mother. And so I decided to take that role. That was on my own. Didn't have anything to do with my old man at all. So I do want to clear that up. And I think I try to clear that up the best way possible, that, you know, that if you come from a gang life, you know, you'll be a part of that particular gang life that, you know, I wasn't a part of dad's gang. So when I had my first son, and, you know, my life was spiraling quickly out of control, even of me. It was always out of control, but it was out of control for me, that I knew that I had to, you know, do something. And I've always come from a spiritual foundation. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always, Madea was a diehard Lutheran. You know, I went to Catholic schools. My dad, it was, you know, even though I was born into Islam, you know, so we had a range. I had a range of denominations that I knew, but I, you know, the information about, but I knew that there was a God, regardless about the prophets, the stories were the same. So, you know, spiritually, I knew that I had to do something, and that was the only thing that I can grab hold to spiritually at first for me to get some type of control over my life, and that's what I did. And looking at my little, you know, Stanton and saying, I don't want you to be the inheritance of an empty, empty life. Dad is in the penitentiary for the rest of your life right now. You know, my son is 25, and he's never hugged his grandfather. He's seen him many times, but he's never given him a grandpa hug, you know? So I didn't want that to be his reality, because I started seeing young guys on the block realizing who my son was, and he didn't even know who he was. And they were trying to get him to come on over to the side, and I was saying no. And that's when I moved down south and got, you know, a hold of our family and changed for the better. I wanted to break that cycle, you know? I wanted to break that generational cycle of what was going on in the ghetto. If you was not a steel mill worker and they were cutting the steel mills down, and, you know, you were a drug dealer or a hustler, or, you know, you were that, you know, and I wanted to break that cycle. And that's exactly what we did.
Yeah. Kobe, you saw, or your father was killed when you were 11 years old.
Yes.
What happened?
I mean, like me, myself, I grew up wanting to be like my father. So my father was off into, he was plugged with a gang. He was selling drugs. So as a kid, that was my role model, you know, wanting to be like my daddy. So I was like 3 years old. He went to prison for a murder. I was like 11. I used to go visit him in prison, different things like that, but he came home, then he ended up getting killed. He got beat with some baseball bats. So it's like, oh, man. So I'm like, man. So at that time, I was like, you know, coming up without no father. I turned more to the streets. I knew right for wrong all my life, but at that time, I really just didn't care about nothing at that time. Like, man, I lost my father to this stuff and all that. So I kept getting myself in trouble, going back and forth to the penitentiary, keep hanging around people who, I feel I was getting more love from in the community, you know, some guys and all this and that. So it's just something happened. Now it took me, you know, now to see, you know, see everything clear. Now I want to, you know, educate my kids more and other people's kids in the community about the importance, you know, trying to have love at home and be there for each other in a positive way.
Yeah. We're going to play just a little bit here. This is a scene where you're speaking with, it's a pretty dramatic scene with a mother who has two sons who are members of different gangs, and she has literally left the house and found herself another place to live. She works for Amtrak. Can you set this up for us in your conversation with her?
Yes, this is Toya. She got two kids. They in the same gang but different groups. So at the time, I mean, the mother reached out to me because they have always had each other fighting each other up and guns on each other. And in the same token, what it be is a lot of us grew up without our father around. I mean, you know, with the father missing, it plays a big part of how we grow up sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even like little Mikey, the young man in the film, he worked with Amina every day at the Inglewood office. He was like 5 months when his father went to prison. He'll be out next year, though. So all of us got a revolving doors. A lot of times we had no man right there. I had my grandfather there, but I had my father in there. So these two men was just at each other. And the mama was doing, Toya was doing the best she can for two. She got three kids. One of them in the prison right now, and two of them, they still out. But it's like, what's hard, and you know, every time we see fault, you're going to always blame it on your mama, and she did the best she can, but your father wasn't there, though.
Yeah. Here's that scene.
Your youngest son's still locked up, right?
Yep. He don't get out till 2016 for attempt murder, and he was 17 when they got him.
One thing, you still have all three of your kids.
Yes, God for that. People say I'm crazy because if I lose one of my sons, I don't want no funeral. I don't want nobody to come. you know, give me condolences. And they say that's mean of me, but that's how I feel.
So just stay strong and keep your head up. I'm going to try to reach out to them myself.
Well, I wish you luck in finding them.
Yeah, just try to see what I could do.
Because I know if they have a strong person that's lived that life, I think they could be saved. Because I just can't do it anymore.
Right.
And in the film, you later meet with her, two of her sons. How are they doing now?
One of them working at the, the senior citizen home.
Oh, really?
Yes, and one of them right now in school for clinical justice right now.
Oh, Kobe, that's great news.
Yes. So, I mean, it takes time, and Amina tell you, see, we always be there for these type of guys on an everyday basis. We don't just come around when they having problems. When they doing good, we'll reward them, like take them out to the movies or spend some time with them, take them downtown, do different things like that. So we just keep working with them as it reminds us not to give up on them. A lot of times, because you make bad choices don't mean you're a bad person. And a lot of times people need somebody to embrace them, to show them love. But them two particular guys, I could relate to that because I used to fight. Me and my brother stayed fighting because we grew up in different gangs ourselves. So we stayed in two of them. But my brother, we got that love, though. He'll see me right now, walk down the street and grab me and kiss me. I'm like, man, don't kiss me. I'm your big brother. So he'll do it right now. And him and Amina close, too. He's a fool. Amina could really talk to him and relate to him because my brother, he ain't going to listen to know everybody and know anybody. You got to really have that relationship.
We're in a pledge drive, both of you, so please bear with us for a few moments as we ask for public support. Kobe Williams and Amina Matthews are our guests. They are violence interrupters at the Ceasefire Anti-Violence Initiative on the south side of Chicago, and they are featured in the documentary film Frontline, aired this in February. It's an award-winning film now, The Interrupters, and it gives you a look at violence. Obviously, it's endemic to many urban areas in the United States, but it really gives you a feel for what's going on and why it's going on like nothing I have ever seen. It's an incredible documentary. So they will continue with us in a moment, but let's just move into another gear for a moment. Lisa Nalbandian is joining me in our studios here in downtown Milwaukee. We're in our spring membership drive, and as you know, Wisconsin Public Radio is listener supported, and this is our drive. Donations are the foundation of our budget, and it's why we're asking for your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're looking to get 32 pledges in the next 30 minutes or so. Make your pledge right now at 888-202-2552 or online at WPR.org.
We get wonderful guests at WPR because they know that you will ask great questions. We will not be interrupted by commercials. Your support makes this possible, and we are delighted to be able to present two of the stars in the Interrupters film this hour. Their work is absolutely phenomenal. So every now and then we branch into territory that we never thought we would go and talk to people who are doing remarkable work and get an understanding of something on a very, very deep level. So please, thank you in advance for allowing us to do this kind of programming, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You can receive the DVD, The Interrupters, as a thank you gift for your pledge of $150. Your pledge will help support the programs, and you'll enjoy this thank you gift. That's the DVD, The Interrupters, for your pledge of $150 or more. Your pledge of any amount supports WPR programs. Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You care about state, regional, world events, human-to-human interaction at WPR, and on this program you get all of that information and also commentary and suggested reading.
You get news and information with programming that inspires you to learn more. Support all the programs you value at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we want to let you know that We welcome all of your pledges. We are still looking for 32 more pledges in the next, how many minutes? I always ask you that. I'm sorry.
25 minutes.
25 minutes. Okay. Help out now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maybe you've made the decision to become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio, but you're looking for the best way for it to fit into your budget. A sustaining membership may be the answer. You decide on a monthly amount to be deducted from your bank account or credit card, and you set it up to be ongoing.
Sustaining, automatically renewing memberships are powerful because they're cost-efficient and reliable for WPR and convenient and affordable for you. Choose a monthly amount and become a sustaining member right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're still looking for 32 members in the next 20 minutes or so. Help out right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks very much, Lisa. Amina Matthews and Kobe Williams are with us. Violence Interrupters, they're featured in the film. They are Ceasefire Anti-Violence Initiative, Violence Interrupters, and they do phenomenal work on the south side of Chicago, and they become pretty well known. We were joking with Amina earlier that some of the reviews of her work have said this is a woman who needs to be in charge of the UN, if not the world. And she started the interview saying, give me the keys. We certainly welcome your phone calls, too. We have a lot going on today. But if you want to join this on-air conversation, it's 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@WPR.org. You do one of the scenes in the school. There's a horrible incident outside one of the schools, and there's a shooting right after school hours. You're trying to deal with getting young people at a school in the Chicago area to look at alternatives to violence. And how do you do that, and how successful have you been with changing people's minds in that regard, Amina?
You know, one thing is so important is that we bring, you know, I always like to say Kobe and I and the team of Interrupters and the outreach workers as well, we bring the noise because that means that we're credible messengers. We know exactly. See, the things that these young guys and girls are looking for is things that the information we know, because we know the history of what happened back when they, you know, hear from one of their uncles or their grandfathers or their aunts, and they're talking about back in the day, you know, and now back in the day is for them, you know, 5 years ago to some of these young shorties are back in the day. So when we bring them the information of, you know, what was going on, what we did and didn't do, you know, when membership was, when when I say membership, far as gangs and the organizations, you had to hold your up to a membership, right? So when we were part of the structure of the street, there were things that we didn't do. Shooting at 8 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the afternoon or any time during the day while mom and dad and the kids were moving around, that was unacceptable. Snatching and grabbing from somebody that just came from work or going to work or taking someone's gym shoes, those are things that was unacceptable. So once we, you know, get them to put down the gun, once we get them to put down the gun, we get into their heads and we talk about the things that they hold dear to their hearts, such as the stars, different stars that they may really love, you know. So when we talk about and they know that we're telling the truth, they know that we've been there and we've done that, that holds a great deal of weight that these guys and girls, they want to hang out with us from now on because they want more knowledge. They want to understand why we're doing what we're doing now. They want to help in some way. And they're really on defense. They don't want to be out there shooting. They want to out. So when Kobe and I arrive on the scene and the other Interrupters in outreach and we give them an alternative, they listen and they grab. Now, I'm not going to say 100%, but I'll say close to maybe 95, 92% of the guys and girls will listen and they'll hang out. And it's about planting the seed so we can get those 100%ers.
Yeah. Kobe, yeah. What do you do about the guns? I mean, the violence can be so lethal because people are holding guns. Are they readily accessible? Is this something that you deal with at the initiative?
A lot of times we try to deal with everything that we know that could harm somebody. So what we do, like Amina said, our most important thing is we can't change everybody, right? But what we do is build a lot of relationships. See, we out there walking the communities, we riding in the communities, we out there every day building relationships
right.
more than anything. So when something occur in the community, sometimes me and Amina and them walk up on incidents when people might have guns out or get into it right then. Or sometimes once we build relationships with everybody, they parents reach out to us, they big cousins, they brothers, they uncles, Amina, Kobe, anybody, y'all get over here. They finna get into it. They had a fight last night. They don't get into it. So everybody reach out to us. So we just try to keep building relationships and meeting these guys where they at. But it works so good for us because we not judgmental. We ain't telling nobody, don't be in the game, don't sell drugs. We just tell them because you have a disagreement, you ain't got to shoot and kill nobody. We just focus on reduce the shooting and killing, though, and changing their mindset, their thinking. Because we know we can't change everybody, but one thing we don't do is give up on nobody. We don't give up on nobody.
Yeah.
So we keep building relationships and keep building relationships. We feel we'll try different ways. We're me and Amina and the rest of the team, we start strategizing on this and that. Like, man, or it says Amina doing the mediation, and I'm like, and she's like, man, I can't, he ain't getting it, so I wish he'd go. All right, I'm going to try this way, Amina, then you try this way.
Mm-hmm.
So we tag team them to try mm-hmm. to get them to open up to us. But doing this type of work, you got to be thinking on your feet at all times.
Oh, yeah, you do.
At
you,
all times.
You got to be careful, too. I mean, you got to be careful, right?
I'm going to be honest. Yeah. Me and Amina and the team, I'm being honest, not just trying to sound cocky, but it's a dangerous job, but
right.
all of us don't even be thinking about that. We
careful comes afterwards. Careful comes afterwards after
exactly.
Kobe goes home and his wife sees him in the middle of,
exactly.
you know, on the news, my husband sees us on and he hears about what could have happened or,
right.
you know, then that's when that's
right.
when we say, okay, next
yeah.
time, baby.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah.
Try to let somebody else handle that, baby. But, you know, we
right.
got to do our work. So.
Right.
Let's,
families are so supportive. They know exactly what it is that we got to do, what we want to do, and the strong need of what needs to be done. So our families are 100% in.
Well, if they didn't know before, they sure know after seeing the film what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
yeah.
You're right.
JD in Green Bay, we're inviting some listeners to call in now. Hi, JD.
Good morning. My question is this. I was telling you screener that I'm 63. I was born in the South, and back then we really didn't have the problem that we have today, and I credit that to my mother, because when we stepped she raised us, and it wasn't a father in the house, but once we stepped out of line, she got us back in line real quick. And I feel like today parents are caught between a rock and a hard place, and I think part of it's society's fault. This is why I think this way. Because nowadays, back then, we got a whipping. If we stepped out of line, the neighbor disciplined us, or the school teacher disciplined us, or they sent a note home and my mother disciplined us. But today, if you do that today, you know, child abuse.
Amina?
Yes.
You want to respond to that?
You know, the brother's absolutely right. There's a lot of different factors that plays a big part in why our communities all over the nation is the way that it is. And it is because of how the system has, you know, said that, well, we can't discipline our children. With Madea, we were poor, and I never realized that we were poor. And yes, Madea put her foot in our backs if she had to, but I had a situation at a school, and the principal emailed us through the Interrupters Contemporary, and he wanted to talk to one of the interrupters, and he said that his son, now this young man's father just got out of jail not too long ago, and he caught his son writing some gang calligraphy on his books, and he got on him. He got on him really bad, and so the school found out because the son came home and the son came to school and said, "My dad, you know, my dad whooped me," and so the principal said, "Well, this is the reason why he whooped them. So we're mandated reporters. What should we do?" I said, "For me as a mother and for me to save my child. And if that is to be effective, because this young man has been away from his father for so many years, and now his father is establishing relationship back with him, and regardless of the fact he still is his father, he has communicated with him as a father, and if he chastises him to keep him from going in the wrong direction at 13 years old, then, you know, maybe we should look at it, wait and watch to see if this is abuse or if this is a father raising, you know, his hand, disciplining to a 13-year-old, because I know I have a 13-year-old and he's starting to smell himself, and sometimes he'll, you know, he'll try my husband and I and my husband to tell him right, at, you know, you don't want to go there. You need to put that chest right back in your shirt before you won't have it anymore. So we do have to discipline our children, not in an abusive way, but we do have to discipline our children. These kids are, you know, it's not as it was before, sis, as do as I say and not as I do. These children are doing as they see us do, as the media is doing, as the video is doing, as whatever they see that's attracted to them is doing, and it may not be the right avenue that they need to go through. And if it's someone there that, you know, if that's an effective way, to me, that's not, that's like the end result.
Yeah.
If we have to, you know, so, but I know that this, the principal also said that this kid had been going through some changes, was struggling, that he wanted to get out there. He thought that it was cool because his dad was out there, and his dad is letting him know, no, I'm not letting you go out there regardless of what I did or why I did it. So the system does, you know, the child abuse issue, I think that that should be in place, but it should be different variables that a child should be able to call on their parents.
Let's go to Jenny in Madison. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Kathleen. I want to say I saw the documentary in February and was very moved by it. I used to represent kids in the abuse and neglect court in Cook County, and mm-hmm. I want to say that what strikes me as so brilliant about the strategy is that a lot of these kids are from broken families. They've been given up on numerous times. And the reason that they develop this mistrust of any authority or anything, and why they're so easily drawn into the gang, is that there's no counterbalance to draw them away from it. This type of strategy where kids know you are not going to give up on them no matter what they do, and the development of relationship, that to me is the key to solving this problem, because you have a lot of kids that are they're off any kind of a tether. They don't understand what it is to be tied to each other in this type of meaningful way, where you have a long-term point of view. In a relationship, you understand that your behavior now affects the future of your relationship with this person. And if you have an investment in each other, that is a very big counterbalance to prevent you from doing anything to mess up with a person who's loving you and investing in you. So, you know, I really think that's brilliant. But I really want to call Amina out on this issue of disciplining the kids in a physical way. I think that is part of, you know, I'm Latin American. This is in our history, too, that this type of discipline is typically what was used. I think what that actually models is a violent attitude, and it prevents problem solving in a tense situation. I think when you learn other strategies to discipline as a parent, to use your authority and your influence with your child based on the relationship you have, there's no need to resort to physical discipline. And I think those are the skills that we lack.
Okay, let's get a brief response. We're almost out of time. Amina?
Yeah, I mean, calling me out is kind of a little harsh. That's some street terminology. But like you heard, like I said at the end of my statement, that physical abuse, that's the end, that's the last resort. Sometimes when you're rationalizing with a child as an adult and they're not understanding exactly what the authority figure of letting you know exactly what is good for you, what needs to be done, or if there's something that needs to be, some kids need to be physically spanked up. I'm not saying beat down, tear nobody out, you know, kill them or drown them or set them on fire or anything like that. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying to get an attention of such child, and it's case by case. Every child you can communicate with them verbally. Now, I'm sorry, not with every child you communicate with them verbally. Some kids don't understand that until the end result that you may have to get their attention. No, I don't believe in corporal punishment, sis. I believe that you may have to get attention of some kids, especially some of these guys that's out here wanting, in this incident with the young guy, he wanted to do what his dad was doing, and his dad was letting him know by verbal communication, that's not what I want for you. It got me years in the penitentiary, and he still wasn't understanding. In a kind, loving way, he had to let him know that you're still a kid. I want you to be a kid. You're going to go to school. You're not going to go in a gang, and I'm not going to go get you out of the dope house again, because if I do, it won't be nice for some other people's kids.
Yeah, and on that note, we have to say goodbye to both of you. We do want to end. Thank you so much for being with us, two of the people who have worked as anti-violence interrupters with the ceasefire program on the south side of Chicago, Amina Matthews and Kobe Williams. We thank them so much for their time. This is, it really is a film that is in some ways hard to watch because of all that happens. But this was one of the more moving scenes. Just briefly, this is Amina at a funeral, speaking at a young man's funeral after he was killed in a gang fight.
I need everybody from the ages of 13 to 24 to stand up. I'm the second oldest daughter to Jeff Ford, and I'm fed up.
That's right. Go ahead.
Because each and every one of you all can be duped right here. I'm going to be real honest with you all because, see, we real talking up in here because Duke is real laying right in front of us.
All right. Well, that's The Interrupters. Hard to make a transition here, but for those of you who haven't seen it, you should. Because it really gives you a deep understanding of the kind of violence. It's not just in South Side of Chicago. It's in parts of Milwaukee, too, and big cities all over the country. And we're in a pledge drive. You may want to consider asking for the DVD, The Interrupters, as your thank you gift when you give us $150 or more. That would be good. I'm Kathleen Dunn. We are in our spring membership drive. Lisa Nalbandian is joining me in our studios in Milwaukee, and you know that you're always going to hear something worthwhile, something fairly dramatic, as was the case on today's program. We're asking you to put a value on this program and support it, everything else you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio as well, by making a gift in any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're looking for 24 pledges in the next 8 minutes or so. Thank you if you've already given. If not, help us stay on track by making your contribution right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've probably been captivated by listening to Kobe and Amina talking about their work on the south side of Chicago, their work that's featured in The Interrupters. Take a few minutes to make this hour and many more hours possible. Put a value on the programs that you enjoy every day or that challenge you every day, and make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You decide the amount of your pledge. Every pledge is appreciated, and every pledge helps pay for the programs you love on WPR. Consider asking for the DVD, The Interrupters, as your thank you gift when you give $150 or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maybe your gift is $50, $100, $500, whatever amount you choose is the right amount. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Giving to Wisconsin Public Radio takes just a few minutes, and in return, you get so much back. Consider a donation today of $100 a month.
And your $1,200 contribution will help us bring you the talk and the news and the music, the entertainment that you count on from WPR, and helps ensure that our community and our state get the public radio that we deserve. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a great source of information about the nation, the world, and Wisconsin. You value WPR for the lifelong learning it brings to your life. You learn something new here every day, year after year.
This continuing education is possible only because of support from listeners like you. And like any education, you get out of it what you put into it. Invest in your education at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Remember, you can get the DVD, The Interrupters, for your pledge of $150.
Yeah, it's a really important documentary. It's only started to win awards. It's going to win many of them. It's a raw film. It is filled with violence and attention to violence and the work of the ceasefire interrupters, people who put themselves right in the middle of violence and try to find the soft spot in the people who are up to violent behavior. It's a film that will stay with you. It's very important. So, again, a pledge for $150, and we would be delighted to send you the documentary. You can listen to WPR every day for years. As you know, you'll never get a bill. We don't count how many minutes you listen. We don't put a meter on your radio.
No, we don't. Instead, we use the honor system. We count on you to voluntarily make a pledge to pay for the listening you do.
And you decide how much WPR is worth to you, whether it's a dollar or two a week or a dollar a day. You decide and go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're looking for 24 pledges in just the next couple of minutes. Your pledge right now helps pay for the programs you count on. Thank you if you've already given. If not, give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you already renew by mail or make ongoing monthly transfers from your bank account, thank you. Listeners who renew and monthly sustainers are the backbone, really, of WPR.
If you haven't given yet, join thousands of other wonderful WPR members by donating at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You'll enjoy WPR Pledge Free after 1 o'clock this afternoon. To make Pledge Free afternoons possible, we need to pull together during these morning hours, and particularly this hour. There will be many of you who will find that this film will change the way you think about violence. The Interrupters for $150 pledge. It's an important documentary. Your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 helps keep this pledge drive efficient. And thank you in advance.
Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now is a great thing to do with 2 minutes of your time. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Ask for The Interrupters with your pledge of $150 or more. Thanks so much, Lisa. Again, the number is 888-202-2552. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Cynthia Schuster for producing this hour. And thanks, everybody, for pledging and for listening. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Great conversations ahead.